Am I good to go? Okay, so if I've got the technology set up here, I'm going to show you. It's an extract from a longer Sydney Banks recording, which was made in about 2000 or so, year 2000. So I think he died in 2009. But it was one of the last of the sort of public talks that he gave, as far as I know. He didn't do that many after this time. So there were people went from all over the world. It was recorded at Long Beach in the US, wherever that is. And there's a few faces in the audience who you might recognize from the recent conference. Some of the people there who have now become quite well known as the teachers. But I chose this one because he's talking about the experience that he had, through which he came to understand and talk about the three principles. And it's not something that appears on any of the other recordings or anything. I think he got a bit reluctant to speak about it eventually. It was like, oh God, do I have to tell that story again? Which he actually jokes about at the beginning. But it is quite a remarkable thing. Remember, he was a welder. You know, that was his background. He was just a tradesman. No history of psychology or any of that stuff, and this thing happened to him, and then he found a way to articulate it. But it's quite funny, and lasts about half an hour. Are you up for watching the whole thing?
Yeah.
You can nod off if you like. Doesn't matter. It'll just go in subliminally.
The windows are open.
Well, they don't really shut properly, so I just need to. Whoops. Let's find it here. Okay, let's get that there. All right. Are you ready? Here it goes. So let's see if this works. Look at that. We've even got sound. So I'll move out of the way once it's up and running.
Somebody asked me today if I would explain what happened while I filmed this. I don't normally do this, but I'm really fed up saying it. We'll say it one more time. It was 102. 26 years ago, that was when all the awareness groups were in real high spirit, really going. Everybody was into awareness groups. And I really couldn't be bothered with that. I just didn't believe in it. And all my friends were going to awareness groups. And my late wife and I, we had a little problems like everybody else, but nothing disastrous. We thought, no, I'm not going to do it. So all my friends were after us, oh, you should really try this place and that place. And we heard that it was a very, very highly specialized person from New York coming to BC. So we thought, well, if we're going to go, we're going to go to the best. So we decided to go. We put our name in and registered, got frightened and cancelled it. We did it a second time, our insecurity came back and we cancelled it again. The third time, we put our name in again, and the woman there said, this has to be Mr. Banks. So anyway, off we go to this thing. And it was a weekend. And it was disastrous. It was awful. They were screaming at each other. They were cursing and swearing at each other. They were telling you to argue with your partner. And I thought, this is crazy. Why would anybody that has problems in their arguing and they want to stop this arguing, why would they go to some crazy guy that tells them to argue more? This is like saying, you stick your finger in the fire and you go, wow, it's so sore, and somebody comes up. You want to cure it? Stick it back in again.
Probably up with you, right?
We decided then and then that we were going to leave it and go home. But a couple of nights before, we were having a cup of coffee with this young couple. And this young couple were there because they had problems, and he himself, the fellow, he was a psychologist, he was a doctor. And we started talking, just having a cup of coffee, and he was telling me how insecure he was. And I said, well, you've got a partner, because I'm really insecure. And I told him why I was insecure. And I went into all the details of my life, why I was insecure. Poor Sid, poor Sid, poor Sid. And he's listened to me. Well, a couple of nights later, I saw the same man, and he said the most unusual thing to me. He said, you know, Sid, the other night you told me you were insecure, and I've never heard such nonsense in all my life. And I heard it. And what I heard was, there's no such thing as insecurity, it is only thought. And it hit me like a ton of bricks, that all my insecurity was only my own thoughts. And it was like a bomb going off in my head. And I turned around to him and I said, have you any idea what you just said? He says, of course I do. I don't make out of China. But I knew he didn't, because he was telling me how insecure he was. And it was so enlightening. It was unbelievable. And for 3 days and three nights, I never slept. Because of such beauty coming into my life that I'd never experienced before. And I'd lie in bed, and it felt like the entire evening was like 15 minutes. It just went that fast. In the daylight. And on the third evening, we went over to Salt Spring Island, where my mother-in-law lived, to spend a couple of days with her. And the first evening I was there, I'm sitting in the living room, reading the newspaper. My mother-in-law, my late wife, were in the kitchen making supper. And they were talking to each other. And you've heard cosmic humor, where you see beyond the world? Well, I heard. And I burst out laughing, because I knew they didn't have a clue what we're talking about. And my old mother-in-law got fuming mad. And she came walking into the living room, and she said, may I ask what you're laughing at? Well, that made me laugh even more. And both the ladies sat down, and I sat down. I thought, boy, I'm in trouble. I've got two women against me. I'm thinking to myself, how can I get off the hook? You know. So I stood up to try and explain why I was laughing. And instead of doing that, I turned around, looked out the picture window at the ocean. It was like being sucked down a tunnel. And all of a sudden, buzzing, and there was white light all around me, just buzzing, buzzing, and I was in the middle of this light. Nobody could see it, just me. And it was like I was captured in this white light, and I was just buzz, 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 and right then, I realized the true meaning of God. And I started to cry. And I turned around to Barb and I said, I'm home. I'm free, I've made it, I've conquered this world. This means to say that you and I will be traveling all over the world. We're going to change psychology and psychiatry so millions of people will be healed. Well, you can imagine what these two women look like. They look like somebody had hit them right between the eyes. And because I found the secret in mind, I knew what we're thinking. So I started to talk about normal things, just everyday things. But that didn't take the fear away. And the following day, I was talking so different. I was talking without thought. And everything was just coming out, like I'm doing now. You don't have to think. You don't have to think. And out it came, and nobody knew what I was talking about. And I'm scratching my head saying, wait a minute, am I talking in some foreign language? And I'm talking so simple. And everybody's going, whoa. Well, I went back to my work 2 days later, and when I started to talk, nobody knew what I was talking about. Now, I wasn't talking about this. I was just talking about everyday life. But still, there was something wrong. I worked in that mill for 10 months after. No intentions whatsoever of leaving. And one Friday afternoon, I was working away, and I stopped, and I stood up. I thought, oh, I've got to leave. And I walked into the office, and I said, I'd like to hand my resignation in. And I said, oh, Scotty, come on, please think about this. You've been here nearly 14 years. You've got all this seniority. You can't leave. And I burst out laughing. And I said, I'm sorry, I've got to leave. And they said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know. They said, have you got money to support yourself? I said, no. Oh, you better think about this. And it was a real turmoil. And I said, no, please, I'm leaving in 1 month's time. Now, how they knew, I don't know. But 1 month later, I went over to Salt Spring, and all from all over the world, people came. Gurus from India, monks from Tibet, people from all over the world. And to this day, I still don't know how they have gone. And that was the beginning. And it was the beginning of good fun. Because I met the most unusual people you've ever met in your life. No wonder they thought I was crazy, you know, because of the people that came. It was really interesting. And they're talking about spiritual energy, but they didn't really realize what spiritual energy is. Spiritual energy is the world. It is. It just is. You don't have to go looking for it. It's not in some far-off land. It's inside you. It's deep down in your soul. You know how some preachers in the old days would say, you're losing your soul to the devil because you're doing harmful things to people. Well, that's true, because you're losing your spiritual intelligence. And because you're losing your spiritual intelligence, you're losing your soul. You're losing your common sense. Don't you see? It's all the same thing in a different world. There was many, many things. Another funny one it got me was, matter of fact, there's another guru from India. Well, he didn't live in India, he lived in the United States somewhere. And he had 6 followers with him. And he disagreed with me because I kept saying, never be a follower. Never, never, never be a follower. And he says, I resent that because people follow me because I'm so wise and I'm so this and I'm so that. And I says, well, I'm sorry we disagree on this point, but if you're a follower, you'll lose your own dignity. You'll lose your own self-confidence. You lose everything if you're a follower. Now, it's different, quite different between being a follower and being a listener. Because I could listen to, say, maybe the high Catholic priest or a person like that, and you listen. Then you go and listen to a rabbi and you listen. Then you go to the grocery store and you listen. You listen all over the place. You could go to the library, and I guarantee what you're looking for is in your library. Guaranteed. And I don't even know the books in your library. And no matter where it is, the truth is there. But you've got to find it. And even when you open a book, it's there. But you've got to find it. You ever read a book and you say, wow, that's incredible. And you get an insight. You close the book, and the following day, you could look till hell freezes over and you can't find it. But it's in there. You saw it. You saw beyond the word. And that's the most important thing. And this is what this fellow was getting quite upset about. So I talked with this man and his followers for about maybe an hour. Then Barb says, I wonder if these people would like some tea. And I said, sure, okay. So we both went into the kitchen, we're making tea, we had a can, we got cookies and all this, put them on. And this fellow comes up to me and he says, you know, Sid, it's very interesting what you're saying, but there's only one thing bothers me. And I says, what is that? He says, you have no humility. And I said, oh, sorry you feel that way. He says, yeah. He says, you've got to find humility. He says, now, I have lots of humility. And I'm looking at this man saying, wait a minute, something's wrong here. So anyway, we had the tea ready, and I took the teapot to walk in, and this guru says, can I help? So Bob hands on this can of cookies. Immediately he dropped to his knees, and he walks through the kitchen on his knees, into the living room, all around everybody, passing the cookies on his knees, comes back into the kitchen, and he gets his finger and he says, now that's humility. And I always remember what I said to him. I said, do you know, sir, humility is when it isn't. And he says, what do you mean by that? I said, you figure it out. Now we know, everybody in here knows, we're the most humble people on earth.
That too is us, right?
Humility is the ego. An image of self-importance. And when you can get rid of that ego, that image of self-importance, this is where you start to live in tranquility. Because you don't care. You don't care. You're not going to hurt anybody. Now don't get me wrong. But you don't care. And the state of non-caring is the most beautiful state in the world. Because you're not thinking about yourself. You only think about others. And when you think about others, then you will feel good. Know yourself and think about others. And yet the ironic and the paradoxical thing about this, I said to you yesterday, be as selfish as you can and find it for yourself. But once you find it for yourself, then your world switches. And you can't find that switch until you see that. You've got to find your own switch that puts that light on. You know how the biblical teachings talk about light? Light is wisdom. That's what wisdom is. That white light I was talking about, only I could see that. And I know many people used to come up and say, to Barb, what did you feel like when this was happening? She says, well, I couldn't understand it, but there was a feeling in that room that night. It was a tremendous feeling. She says, at first, we thought Sid had flipped. Because he's a grade 9 educated man talking about doing all these things. And there was no doubt. There is no doubt. There is no God. And I'm not just talking about myself. I'm talking about anybody in the world. When I'm talking, I told you this morning, I'm talking in personal. It's nothing to do with me or you. We're talking about a spiritual essence that lies deep within the soul of every human being on earth. Everybody has it deep within their own soul. And the idea is to clear your mind of all the intellectual understanding that you have, clear your mind to let this wisdom in. And this is why people meditate. They meditate to clear the mind, to quiet it. And once the silence comes, this wisdom, it doesn't enter. This is a nice fallacy. It does not enter. It unfolds. It doesn't go from outside inside. It goes from inside outside. So you only find something that you already have. Something that you were born with. Something that you'll die with. Something that nobody on earth can take away from you. Only you can destroy you. Only your own mind, your personal mind, can stop you from seeing this. And this is why these wise people say, meditate. You see the simplicity in this? That's all it is. When I found this, I lost every friend I ever had in my life, except for two people. Ken and Elf, and that was very touch and go. Now my friends that know me from the past, they thought I was in the middle of an Elvis breakdown. Because after I left to work, and I went, had to go back to do some paperwork once, and I saw some of my friends, and the first person I saw came running up to me and said, "Oh, hi Scotty," and shake my hand, and, "What are you doing these days for a living? Are you busy?" I said, "Yeah, I'm very busy." And I didn't want to talk to him because I didn't want to frighten him. So I didn't want to say it. I said, "Yes, I'm busy and I'm doing well." "Well, what are you doing? Who are you working for?" I said, "Well, I'm working for myself." "Well, you bought your own weld machine." I said, "No." And he said, "Look, Sid, you're avoiding my question. Now I want you to answer. What were you doing, say, 2 days ago?" And I really didn't want to hurt him. I didn't want to frighten him. But I had no other choice. He asked me. And I said, "Well, I was at UBC University and I was talking to professors." Whoa. He literally exploded and ran. All I saw was his back. And I saw the same man about 5 months later, and he asked the exact same question. "What are you doing?" I said, "Remember the last time you asked that question?" And he went, because I had to put myself in their position. If I was in their position and somebody like me was saying what I was saying, I would think there was nutty as hoorahs. And they thought I was in the middle of a nervous breakdown because they were seeing the impossible being done. It's only one way it's possible. It's already inside you. And that's what these wise mystics of the world throughout time have done. They've talked to people, not to give them something, but to draw out of them what they already know. And they talk before form. And if you talk before form, and that person listening hears, then they get it. Because it unfolds from their soul, from their consciousness, deep within, it comes out, and it's theirs for life. And once you get it, you never lose it. Can't lose it. I know a lot of people find little bits, and they go up and down, and maybe they're happy for a month, then they go unhappy, and they'll phone up and say, I just lost it. I said, don't worry, it'll come back. As long as you realize all it is, you've changed thought. Your thoughts have changed. Change them back. How do you change them back? By truly realizing there's been a switch in thought. Thought is the missing link that every therapist in this world is looking for. Thought is the missing link that literally everybody is looking for. I was talking to a friend this morning, and he said in the Jewish religion, there's something called Das. Is that right? And in Hebrew, Das means mind. And this, do you mind me say, I won't mention names. This rabbi went up to somebody and said, look, I found somebody that talks about Das. Why don't we still talk about Das? And he said, because nobody understands. If you really start to understand what mind is, you realize it's true. You cannot give it away. It's impossible. You know the kahunas in Hawaii? Kahuna in the Hawaiian language means near the priest, the Hawaiian priest. And kahuna in the Hawaiian language means the carriers of the secret of mind. Now back to that Das. So there's the Jewish and the Hawaiian, we're saying the same thing. There is no difference. You could take any religion, anyone in this world, and put them all together, and they're all saying the same thing differently. And that's why I said to you yesterday, no matter what church you belong to, keep going. And see if you can go beyond what you've been hearing before. It's there. It's everywhere. Truth is everywhere. Truth is in this room right now. This is made of truth. This glass. Truth is an essence before form. The spiritual energy that has no form. I know the scientists and physicists all nowadays are starting to have a clue, starting to have the idea that there is a formless energy, and that everything is created from this formless energy. And I was talking to this doctor once about that, but the trouble is, they look for the formless energy through a microscope. How can you possibly find formless through a microscope? Here's where it comes. Here. Heart, head, the combination comes through. This is where the psyche comes in. The logic of the psyche. Psychological. Get it? Psychological. The logic of the psyche. The logic of the soul. The logic of the essence. This is where psychology, the original psychology, if you look up the dictionary, it's a study of the mind and the soul. But through time, because nobody really understood mind or soul, they gave it up. Like they said, no sense in talking soul because this is psychological, the logic of the psyche. The soul belongs to the church. It's so we forget that. So let's concentrate on mind. Then they realized that nobody knew what mind was, so they dropped it. And this is the biggest mistake ever, because when they dropped it, they went to behavior. When they went to behavior, this is after the fact, too late. The damage has been done. And if you stick to mind, soul, and consciousness, you find the answer. Anybody got a question? Well, no, I'm serious. Nice and loud, please, eh? Impossible. I said yesterday when a newborn baby comes into this world, it's come from the spiritual, it's been incubated, but it has no memory, it hasn't experienced creation yet, because it's still absolutely pure. Has no idea of creation. When that baby is born and comes into this world, then it's entered the physical world. It's left the spiritual world, come into the physical world, then its five senses take over. Touching, smelling, seeing, tasting, whatever. And that's when it comes into this physical world. And from then on, it travels through the world, guided by those five senses. But the five senses in the room are totally neutral until you get amalgamated with mind, consciousness, and thought. They are the creators of this reality, those three principles. If you look carefully, and I don't know much about religion, I really don't. I'm not a religious person. One time I was a kid in Scotland, yeah. Spiritual, but not religious. Because what I'm saying has no form. And I don't want form. And that's where it goes missing, because as soon as it takes on a form, it's lost. No longer purity. You can stick with the formless. Yes, your life will change. It's like when I started to realize you could talk without thinking, that was a beautiful feeling. It really was. It's like what's happening now. I'm not thinking, just coming out. It's so simple. You don't need to. You just let what we call universal thought take over. Because the answer is always there. I remember the first time somebody said to me, this was only about 3 days after my experience, sarcastically, well, what is life? And I said, well, it's the divine dream suspended within the boundaries of time, space, and matter. I didn't know where that came from. where did that come from? And only once in my life, I challenged it. And the challenge lasted about 20 seconds. Is this right? Because I was coming out with things that I didn't even know what they meant. I remember once talking to a whole bunch of gurus and doctors and various people from all over the world. Very, very first time I ever spoke. And I spoke for about 2 hours. But when it was finished, I went up to my wife and I said, could you tell me what's the true meaning of this word I've been using all night? And she told me, I thought, oh, thank God, it's okay. But you get used to it. And this is why, you ever notice the therapists in this room right now, and all the helpers of humanity in this room right now, when they get up, they never have a speech, they never have anything written, it just comes out of them. Simplicity. Simplicity is always the answer. But nobody knows when creation started. Nobody could ever explain that. You just know it has.
Wow. Let's put the lights on, wake us up. Mm. Did you notice in the audience? Recognize anybody?
Casey, that was like a surprise.
Who was there?
Kathy,
I think, was there, yeah.
And is it Keith?
I didn't see Keith, but he could well have been there. George Pransky was there, looking much younger.
Oh yeah, and Linda.
And Linda and Judy Sedgman also.
Yes.
Did you see her? Yeah. She's become
Peter
quite
somebody. Old. He's local, I don't know him.
Ah. Okay. So, let me just get rid of that.
But he's talking about not having thought.
I know.
Which is, it seems like a whole different level almost, or something, I don't know.
Yes and no. I mean, when he said that, he went on to say that what you experience in the absence of the personal thought is what he called like the universal consciousness or mind just coming through. And his take on that was that that's what delivers whatever's needed in the moment. It just comes through if you're not putting anything else in the way. So there is thought in that sense. But it's... Thank you. That's what brings it back. We could start a whole religion based on that, couldn't we? But it's an interesting distinction between the personal thought and the, let's say, the divine thought or the universal thought.
Noticed that with the people at the conference as well. They've said that many times.
Yes.
That when they go out there and they speak, it's not like they've got it pre-planned or anything.
It's very, you can't authentically teach this from a script. That's what I was saying this morning. You cannot.
And that they found that the right thing came up at the right moment.
Exactly.
At the right time.
Exactly.
Trust.
That's it. And if you're not sitting in that trust, then you haven't really understood it yet.
Mm.
you need to deepen a bit in your own understanding before you're going to be able to communicate it well. And that's the common thing that you'll see with all of the facilitators, is that not one of them comes on with a pre-prepared script. They might have a topic, or a general theme or something like that, but what they say about it on the day is going to be spontaneous. And so it's going to have some life energy in it, because you never know how it's going to come out today.
Yeah, because it has its own unfolding.
Yeah, and we all know that that's where the juice is. I discovered that in my homeopathy practice, that it wasn't when I was asking the routine questions, it was when we got those out of the way, and then suddenly it would take a turn and we both go into a different arena, and I would feel a shift in the energy. And I got curious about that because I knew that that's where the healing potential was, when you go away from the known into the unknown place. Again, I didn't know what I was doing consciously. I just knew that that's what worked. Yeah. So what else did you pick up from what he was saying? He's a good sense of humour. I think you got a taste of that. I met his second wife at the conference. She was there. She was lovely. And I had a little talk. And she spoke a few words also just to the whole audience there. And the thing that she said was, she said that he would be absolutely thrilled to see this gathering because there were over 400 people there. It was to her, it was like the fulfillment of his vision becoming real. But she also said, I really want to emphasize that he was the most ordinary man you could ever meet. And that comes across, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, he never lost his ordinariness, even though he'd had this extraordinary life-changing experience. You know, he went from being painfully shy and riddled with insecurity to someone who was speaking to professors, speaking to psychologists, PhDs, as if that were normal, mm-hmm. about psychology and religion and all these subjects that he got no training or education in. And not only holding his own, but actually educating these people, deepening their understanding of it. So it was clear that something had happened, you know, something major. But his take on that was, this is available to everybody, you know. Don't make this special about me. This is available to everyone. But still, it was an extraordinary experience. There's no denying it.
He talks about the light and that experience. That feels like this is something very different, kind of from what your ordinary experience.
Yeah. Do you know what it sounded just like? The near-death experience.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to the reports of people going through where they actually have been clinically dead, but the consciousness remains, and then at some point they come back, it's almost word for what he said. They almost always have that feeling of being drawn or sucked down a tunnel or something. It's very dark, and sometimes with the noise, he said there was like a buzzing, and then suddenly this bursting of white light, like pure energy. It's exactly how he described it. It's the classic death and rebirth cycle. But he didn't physically go through the clinical death.
Very strange, sorry, but I'm realizing I used to have this thing waking up from sleep.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be very loud. And
yeah.
If now that you're saying it, feels like that's the tunnel, but I never got to the night.
Ah.
But I don't know if it's the same thing. It used to scare me.
You know, I think
I'd be waking up and I couldn't move because I wasn't.
I think almost everyone has touched this place that he's talking about, and most of us forget that we did that.
Well,
or we get scared by it.
My experience of it is something very fearful. And
yeah,
that's
also very common.
You know.
Yeah, and then consequently it's something that we shun. We don't even want to talk about it because it frightens us. But I think when I've had this conversation with people, I find that almost everybody starts to recollect some time when they were a kid or something. And they touch this realm, the spiritual realm. It's in us, it's who we are. It's not only where we come from, it's what we're made of, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's never separate from us, but we separate ourselves from it through our thinking.
Element of surprise in him, even after all the years. I don't know how many years later. But
yeah, this was 26 years later.
But there was still that little.
I think
there I was.
I think he retained that till his dying day. That was like "why me" kind of quality. I think he had that. You know, he was as gobstruck as anybody that they said happened to him. Yeah.
It's the playfulness, isn't it?
Mm.
That's
and serenity. There was such a really deep calm.
You could get a sense of that, and the people that knew him, they all spoke about that. That just hanging around him, they would find themselves just calming down, and the mind would just get very quiet, even if he wasn't speaking or saying anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it is contagious in that sense. I think there is it's like a frequency, you know, a resonance phenomena, that when you're in the presence of it, you start catching it, you start picking up on it, which is nice. It's a communicable, not a communicable disease, it's a communicable quality of presence. So someone asked this morning about mind. In that latter part of the talk, he was talking about mind. I'm guessing that you picked that up. And he was talking about this spiritual energy that the physicists also talk about. He was talking about the formless, that which is before the energy takes form. That's the term he used for that is just mind, as a kind of neutral term. He could easily have used the term God, but that would have been offensive to as many people as it would have been useful. So he tried to keep it neutral, I think, by using mind. But some people hear the word mind and they think of my mind, they think of personal. So that's why he would keep saying, I'm not talking personal. I'm talking about something which is universal. And it's before the creation of form. And this morning we touched on, we were talking about the nature of thought. So thought is one aspect of that formless energy coming into form. So whenever we have a thought, it's gone from the formless to form. And then what happens to it? A moment later, it's formless again. That's all thought is formless energy taking momentary form and then going back into formlessness. There's really nothing to it.
That's why you're able to let it go.
Exactly.
And it's when we add to it that we make it more real for us.
Exactly. Yeah. And both of those are within our power. We have the power to just let it be a passing thought, or we have the power to grab a hold of it and add more and more and more and turn it into something that seems very real and very tangible, but it's still just thought.
I think that's article which I went into the talk with one of the talks with Linda Kamsky, and women were divided up into the individual groups, and it was when she was explaining it, then I realised at that moment when she was talking about it, that actually I've got control.
You have got control.
Yeah, control in the sense of free will, which that is coming from me. It's not out there, it's here.
Mm-hmm.
And that what I add to or what I let go.
Yeah.
So in a way it's empowering to know that.
Yeah.
And it was just that I can't remember how she explained it, but I remember thinking, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And
again, it's paradoxical because it's not that you can control the thoughts that come to you.
No, I agree with that.
They just happen.
Yeah.
You know, by the time you notice you don't like them, you've already had them. they just occur. But there is the point of influence, as you say, is what do we make of it? What do we add to it?
Mm-hmm.
How much life do we breathe into that particular train of thought? Is it a lot? Is it a little? Or is it none? If it's none, it's just a passing thought. Which, as Sid Banks pointed out, a passing thought is harmless. Even if it's a horrible thought. So you can have the thought, I'd like to kill that person. As long as you let it be a passing thought. Nobody got hurt. You didn't. They didn't. Nobody ended up in prison. As Judy Sesman, who's worked a lot in the criminal justice system with this understanding, she pointed out the only difference between the criminal and the rest of us is that the criminal doesn't realise that they don't have to act on all the criminal thoughts they have. They don't realise that.
Because when they understood this as well, it's like, well, if I knew this, I wouldn't be here.
Exactly. They suddenly see that's what got them into prison. It wasn't the fact they had those thoughts, because everybody has them. Periodically, we all have some level of criminal thought, or crazy thought, or stupid thought that would get us into trouble if we followed it. But they don't see that there's a possibility not to take that seriously, just to let it be a passing thought. And anybody who sees that, you become free. You're no longer subject to the whims of your own thinking, of your own craziness. So the amazing thing about that is you don't have to stop having crazy thoughts. That's why it's not about thought manipulation. It's not about thought control. It doesn't matter if you have them. If you have the ability to just let them come and let them go, and just see that that's just a passing thought, what's the big deal? It's not a problem. So it's about the relationship to your thinking rather than working with the content of your thinking. See the difference. Subtle thing, isn't it?
Mm.
Such a subtle.
Mm.
You mean I can still have all that nutty thinking? Yeah, you can. But it doesn't need to be running your life. You can have it without buying into it. And that's what spontaneously starts to happen with people. I've noticed when people start to catch on to this, they start to notice their own thinking without feeling compelled to follow it. And some of you this morning have already, I think, you've said that more or less in different ways. You've said that's what's happened. I just started to notice that you said about this conditioned thinking. You realise, geez, I probably thought that way all my life. Never really seen it before for what it is. And as soon as you're seeing it, you're seeing it, it doesn't have the same hold on you. You're not having to live out of it anymore. Because now you're just watching it. It's like, wow, how crazy am I? Look at that. Geez. No wonder I've been doing deaf things.
You don't have to feel guilty about it either. So,
well,
you know,
unless you add some extra thought to
yes.
it, that becomes optional too.
Not a loving-like person, you're not walking around in a sort of, you know, thinking, oh, I must have lovely thoughts about every person.
Exactly.
Perhaps sort of an indifference.
Yeah.
Indifference to, well, to kill somebody or...
Yeah. Yes, that's why, to me, this is so practical. It's so pragmatic because
yes.
it allows you to be human. It doesn't. It's not a kind of new agey idealist thing where you have to get rid of all those bad thoughts and be, you know, pure light and all this stuff. No, you can continue to have them, but you can see them for what they are.
You don't have to get onto the hamster wheel and keep going round and round.
You don't.
For a while until you decide.
Yeah.
Might get off now.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Could be a little bit tiring.
So that, when it's like that, though, when you. Trying to solve something that's unsolvable,
mm-hmm.
or you know, make somebody behave in a different way, or all those things that we all try and do—it's
exhausting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Little hamster.
Yeah, it is, and I think there's a whole level of chronic tiredness that many people suffer from, which they don't realise is purely from that level of unnecessary thinking, all the unnecessary additional thought. You take that away, that person suddenly has a different kind of energy, and a different feeling state, without doing anything different in terms of the behaviour. If they just drop, they just shed some of that unnecessary thought. And the nice thing with that, it happens by itself. You start to get lighter. And this is, one of the recognisable qualities from the people that have been working in this field for years. They all have that lightness to them. You guys probably saw this. Doesn't matter, it's nothing to do with the age or anything. You know, they could be in their 70s, could be in their 30s. There's a lightness which comes with not taking your own thinking too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lovely quality. You know, it's nice to be around and it's something that's really nice to feel. It's like you don't see them walking around with this kind of mess. You know when someone's in their thinking because it's on their face. It's like there's like furrowed brow and they're looking worried or serious. There's a seriousness or there's a kind of gravity, there's a heaviness to the person, and it's nothing to do with physical form, it's to do with a hyperactivity in the mind.
I think it's when you're in stressful situations.
Wait a minute, what's a stressful situation?
No, what I'm saying is before I'm became aware of this.
Okay,
what,
so what you used to believe was a stressful situation.
I
knew that's what you meant.
What used to happen is I used to try and think my way out of a situation.
Right, that's what we all.
To resolve it by
exactly.
thinking.
Yeah.
That is the way that I thought that you sorted things out.
That's what we all learned.
Mm-hmm.
If I had a bunch of thinking to this, I'm going to get to the bottom of it eventually.
Yeah, it's always, while I can think this through, I will find a solution.
I know.
And having difficulty.
And that's when you can't sleep.
Exactly.
Because you're thinking and thinking and thinking.
But
yeah, you can't switch out.
In that specific example,
yeah.
right now what I feel is, okay, I really, with certain issues, I stop thinking about them
uh-huh.
in a way.
Yeah.
I stop trying to solve them through thinking.
Yeah.
But they're not being solved
no.
anyway. And it's kind of okay, but I feel like, okay, I need to find a solution.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not thinking about it. I leave it. I walk away, and I know that's fine because it feels fine because thinking about it is just heavy.
Yeah.
The problem is now it's not a problem per se, but it's just I haven't not coming across any solutions
yet. It hasn't occurred to you yet.
Now I'm starting to feel the urgency of it. Okay, that please occur to me. No, I mean,
that's,
but you know what I mean? There's
yeah.
this, it's that adjusting quite also.
I know, it's going into a different mode, which we're not used to operating in for a lot of the time. But we all have touched it, you know, at different times in our life, we've all been in that place where we've been racking our brains over something, and then eventually, whether it's through exhaustion or desperation, or we just gave up, or we got distracted, and then what happens? A few days later, you stop and it's like, oh, geez, I know. It suddenly, it pops into your brain from nowhere, and suddenly you see very clearly what's needed.
It's about letting go of control and actually wanting to control your world.
Exactly.
Because you don't need to, because it will do it for you.
Exactly. And you don't have to find...
You don't have to find the answer.
You don't have to find the thought that gives you the answer, because it's all stacked up behind you. It's a question of just allowing it to come in and to bubble up when it does. But we're not in charge of the timetable.
Yeah.
That's you know, that's...
Shocking,
yeah, that's the bit that we hold on to. I need to know now.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't know right now, that says to me you don't need to know right now. That's the way, that to me is the logic of how it works. If you really needed to know right now, you would. You know, I just kind of go with it in that with that sort of a mindset. When people say, well, I need to know now and I don't, well, clearly you don't need to then. Otherwise you would. You know, this is what I think Byron Katie talks about in her own language. She says, well, if you argue with reality, you suffer. So what's the reality right now? Do you know or don't you? I don't. Okay. You know, if you're willing to say yes to that in the moment, there's no suffering. But the moment you start arguing with that, you say, yeah, but I should know, I ought to know, and I need to know, that's the origin of your own suffering right there. So just seeing how that works, you can let go or you can attach. You can get needy, you can let go. I mean, I know for a fact all the things where I thought I really needed to know, subsequently, with the wisdom of hindsight, I can always look back and see, actually, it's just as well that I didn't. You know?
Mm.
You just can't see that in the moment.
Mm.
You can always see it subsequently. And it's the same when you think something needs to happen a certain way or by a certain time. If you let it go, it either happens or it doesn't. Either way, at some point you look back and say, actually, it worked out fine. You know, that was the way it was supposed to be. I just couldn't see it then.
I had that recently with this housing thing, because I had to write a statement about what happened, what I thought had happened, while I was in danger, and there. And every time I thought about doing it, I felt ill.
Mm.
I thought, I can't, am I in denial? You know what it is? I don't actually think this is the right time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So then I just stopped and waited. And then my housing officer said, well, you're in the driving seat with this one. And then the victim support woman phoned me up and said, we're having a meeting at the Lambeth Council, having a meeting, I won't go through the whole thing, but it was like I had to wait for that piece of information.
Yes.
And she told me what happened there. That is, thank you.
And then how did you feel?
I felt very happy.
Exactly.
And I thought, it's almost not... I just took notice of how I was physically feeling.
Yeah.
And I thought, thank you, that's... They've got enough information about this situation. And now I'm sort of ready in a way to do this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a good example. It's like just listening to your body wisdom.
Yeah.
Because it's not disconnected, it's totally connected, you know, it's all wired up.
Mm.
So the body wisdom is wired up to the what we call this divine intelligence. And it's informing us moment by moment by moment, whether we're paying attention or whether we're trying to override it for some reason, whether we're trying to change the schedule to suit ourselves.
Yes.
You get into that mode, your body tightens up, you feel it. Suddenly it becomes pressured, it becomes stressed. So the body feedback is, as far as I can tell, it's totally reliable. 100% reliable. What time have we got? Must be tea time, is it? Is that 3:30? I can't quite see it. Yeah? Let's have a cup of tea. Because refectory probably close at 4:00. I will catch it now. We're in England, come on.
Yes, I know.
It's tea time. Tea time. It's a civilised country.
Well, you better be 13.